The Gemara says that the world consists of three 2,000 year periods of time. The first 2,000 years from the beginning of creation were called the years of Tohu Vavohu. The next 2,000 years were the years of Torah. And the third 1,000 years is Yemos HaMashiach, whenever Mashiach will come during that 2,000 years. When do you think the 2,000 years of Torah started? When were the years of Tohu Vavohu ended and the years of Torah started? Avram Avinu, when specifically when it says V'hanefesh asher osu b'charam, when he went out to be Makarif people. Even though there was Torah before that. Noach learned Torah, Rashi says in last week's Sedra. He knew which animals were kosher and which animals weren't kosher. But Torah is defined not by people learning Torah for themselves, but sharing their Torah with others. And until Avraham Avinu went out and shared his Torah with others, the 2,000 years of Torah didn't start. Even more than that, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah says, Halomed al menas lalamed, a person who learns in order to teach, so he's given the ability to learn and teach. And it for sure means he's going to observe the Torah too, because if you learn and you don't observe what you're learning, it's better you shouldn't learn. So there are four ideas in learning and teaching. There's lilmod, lilamed, lishmar, velasos. Lilmod means to learn for yourself, and lishmar means to observe for yourself. Lalamed means to teach others, and lasos means to make others keep the Torah. So a person who learns with the intention of observing the Torah, that goes without saying. And not only that, but also to teach others, so he gets siyata dishmaya to learn and to teach. A person who learns almanas lasos, not only to teach others, but to see to it that they also keep what he teaches them, so he gets siyata dishmaya for all the things. Says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, what about the person who just learns for the sake of learning? To learn and to observe for himself. He's not interested in teaching anybody. He's not interested in making anybody else keep mitzvahs. He just wants to learn and keep mitzvahs for himself. What happens to him? Why didn't the Mishnah mention that? Says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, somebody who learns Torah and has no intention of teaching it to others or inspiring others gets absolutely no siyata dishmaya, because the Gemara in another place says that a person who learns Torah and doesn't teach it is dvar Hashem boza. He is insulting the Torah, and the end of that pasuk is that you get cut off from this world and the next. Hold on one second. What? Wait. That does not mean that a person has to be a Rebbe or a teacher. What it means is you have to share your Torah with other people. You can do that with your family. You can do that with your friends. You can do that with your children. Right? But somebody who says, I'm not interested in sharing the Torah at all, just for me, then he doesn't appreciate what Torah is, and therefore he's insulting the Torah. So it doesn't necessarily mean you have to be an official teacher. What it means is you have to want to share what you learned with other people. Yeah.
This applies to ladies?
Applies to ladies too. The Sora Imenu also went out to be Makar of people. In fact, the Marshoa says on that pasuk, which the Gemara says, Adam la'amal yulad, a person was created la'amal to toil in this world, and the Gemara says the ikur toil is learning Torah. So the Marshoa says the word la'amal hints to the way that the Torah has to be learned. La'amal is no trikom. It's a contraction of the following words. Lilmod, almanas, lalamid. To learn with the intention of teaching. That's the word la'amal. Lilmod, ayin mem is almanas, and the last lamid, lalamid. What? Lilmod, to learn, almanas, in order, lalame, to teach. And that spells the word la'amal. Adam la'amal yulad. La'amal is, the lamed is lilmod, the ayin mem is almanas, and the last lamed is lalamed. That's the word la'amal.
Give me an example. When people speak
What does it mean to go into culinary self-inaction? It means that people don't even know, or you're not inspiring people?
No. You're not interested in helping anybody else. You're interested in just learning for your own sake.
What if being an example, learning for yourself, growing, and being an example
that could be also teaching other people. But the mice, a person has to find a way to try and influence other people, right, in any way they can. How important is it to be makar of other people? So Simcha Zissel from Kelem says the following. Says we can learn it.
What? Saying today you have to know if you're strong enough to go into security.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Let's
one thing at a time. Okay? One thing at a time. This is all an introduction to a question that we're going to ask. How important is it? So Simcha Zissel says you can learn from a mesis. A mesis is somebody who tries to influence somebody to serve Avodah Zarah or to do other aderas according to other opinions. Not just Avodah Zarah. A mesis. The halacha is a mesis, you have to hate him. You treat him in a way that you don't treat any other sinner. Many, many things are much worse by a mesis than a stama sinner. Somebody who wants to influence other people for the bad. Says Rav Simcha Zissel, we know that Midah Tova Maruba Al Midas Puranios 500 times. So if somebody who wants to influence people for the bad, and even if he's not successful, he just tries to do it, and there's witnesses that he tried, he gets killed. He gets executed. So just for trying, he's a terrible person. So look at the opposite side. Somebody who tries to influence other people, even if he's not successful, the Chara 500 times that is what kind of reward he's going to get. So you see from there how great it is to try to influence other people, even if you're not successful. Just to try. What is the sources of wanting to be makar of other people? One is chesed. If there's a mitzvah, the Chafetz Chaim says, to dress people who need clothing, and to feed people who need food, and that's physical things, most certainly there's a mitzvah to dress people in mitzvahs and feed them spiritual food if they need that. In addition, if there's a mitzvah to return somebody's lost articles, then there's a mitzvah for sure to return them to their heritage. If they're missing the Torah is lost from them. Surely is a mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. And that's why by Avraham Avinu it says, HaNefesh Asher Asu Bechara. The people they made, somebody influences other people, it's like they made them. HaNefesh Asher Asu. There's only one problem. Avraham Avinu influenced many, many people. Not just one. Why does it say HaNefesh? So many people say, because when it comes to Ruchnias, we're all one Nefesh. But that only applies to Jews. And Avraham Avinu was Makar of Goyim. So that's not really a good answer. So I think there's two answers to that question. Why it says HaNefesh Asher Asu Becharon, and they're not exclusive of each other. They're both true. Firstly, Avraham Avinu knew the importance of every individual. Some people are only interested in teaching and be makar of people if there's a lot of people. If there's a lot of people, it's worth it. If it's only a few people, it's not worth it. A person like that is never going to accomplish anything. If you think that it's only important to be makar of and to teach the multitudes, you'll never be successful with even anybody. But if you understand that every individual is important, and you're willing to go out and teach and influence even one person, then you'll be successful with multitudes of people. So Avraham Avinu HaNefesh, every nefesh was important to him, and therefore he was successful with thousands of nefashos. If not every nefesh was important, then you'd be successful with nobody. The second thing is, HaNefesh Asher Asu does not mean other people's nefesh. When a person influences other people and teaches other people, he's perfecting himself too. Because we're all connected, interrelated. And if something's missing in you, it's missing in me. Because you're part of me. That's why the halacha is that if I was Yotzei Kiddush already, but I like making Kiddush, I can't just say Kiddush again. It's a bracha levatalah. But if you come to my house and you weren't Yotzei Kiddush yet, and you don't know how to make Kiddush for yourself, I'm allowed to say Kiddush again for you. Why? Because part of me wasn't Yotzei Kiddush, the part that's connected to you. Since you weren't Yotzei Kiddush, and you're part of me wasn't Yotzei Kiddush yet. And I can say Kiddush again, and be Motzi you. So HaNefesh Asher Asu is not referring to the people that Avraham Avinu was Makariv. It's referring to himself. He made his own Nefesh more perfect by perfecting other people, because they are part of him. So self-perfection and perfecting other people is not contradictory, because when you perfect other people, you're perfecting yourself too. It works like that for sure, even seichel-wise. When you teach somebody else, you know what you're teaching a lot better than you did when you learned it and you didn't teach it. And when you try to influence other people to do something, it makes an impression on you a lot more too, and what you're doing is more important to you because you're trying to convince somebody else, you're convincing yourself also. Yeah.
Does the other way around also work?
That? When you perfect yourself, you're helping to perfect other people? Yes, 100%, because you're a good example to other people too. Okay. There's a Svarno later on. The Svarno says that somebody who perfects other people, who's interested in influencing other people, so he gets a schus, that if the Rabbanu Shlomo wants to give him something, he'll give it to him in his schus. Only a person who influences other people has his own zechuyos. Somebody who's not interested in influencing others, so God gives him things in other people's schus, not in his own schus. It says that Yitzchak Avinu was not promised Eretz Yisrael in his schus, but rather in the schus of Avraham, up until the time that he went out to be Makarif people. Once he went out to Makarif people, the Rabban Shem promised him Eretz Yisrael in his own schus, not in the schus of Avraham. So you see that it's a tremendous personal schus for a person to care about other people and to influence other people. And also the Svarno says that only a person who influences other people is zoche that other people should be saved in his schus. But somebody who's not interested in influencing other people, he can get saved in his own schus, but he can't have other people saved in his schus. So from all of this, we see, right, that influencing other people is a tremendous thing. That is the essence of what Torah is, sharing it with others. And that's why the 2,000 years of Torah started when Avraham Avinu went out to influence others. Okay? All of this was a preface to the following question. If that's the case, Avraham Avinu went out and he was influencing all these people, and two people he threw out of his house and wasn't makar of them. Who are they? Lot, this week's Edra, and Yishmael. Isn't that strange? Avraham Avinu is influencing the whole world and his own family, his own nephew and his own son, he has to throw out of the house. Not makar of them? Why? That's the question.
But,
yeah?
Yishmael was a history of the Shemzalus.
Yeah, okay. Yishmael, you're right, is a lesser question for a few reasons. One is because Yishmael, Sarasol, was going to be a bad influence on Yitzchak. So he couldn't take a chance of trying to influence Yishmael at the same time risking Yitzchak. And the Rabban Shem told him to send him out because of that reason. So fine, so let's forget about Yishmael for now. But Lot, right? Why couldn't he be Makariv Lot? He's Makariv all these Rishayim, all these terrible idol worshippers, and Lot, he can't be Makariv? Lot was worse than these people? Yeah. Yeah.
Lot was his family, and he cared about Lot a lot, so sometimes you make excuses for people you care about.
Yes, but no. You're halfway there, I think, because I wouldn't want to say that Avraham Avinu turned a blind eye to Lot because he was family. But just the opposite. There's a rule, that was the first answer. I have four answers. The first answer is basically what you said in the beginning. Ein Navi Be'iro. A Navi, is usually not accepted in his own city because people are used to him and they're not impressed with him. In order to influence people, you have to impress them. And family members usually are not as impressive because you're used to them as people from the outside. So a person, and this is a fact, people who are excellent in Kiruv or whatever usually are not so successful with their own family. Right? Somebody who grows up in a family of people who are not from, goes out and mashpia on hundreds and thousands of people, and his own family can't be Makariv. because his own family are not as impressed with him because they're used to him as people from the outside. So maybe that's one reason. Avraham Avinu saw that he couldn't impress Lot because his family and Lot was too close to him to be able to really be impressed by him and influenced by him. That's perhaps one answer. Another answer. Avraham Avinu tried very hard. He didn't throw Lot out right away. He took him with him to Eretz Yisrael, right? He raised him, and he tried very, very hard to be mashpi on him. And in the end, he wasn't successful. So sometimes, somebody who mentioned this, sometimes you have to be careful about yourself too, and not be around the hashpos hasviva. The influence of the environment is very strong. And therefore, al tishchaber l'rasha, you're not allowed to attach yourself to rishayim. You shouldn't be around an environment that's negative. So a person tries, he tries with Lot over and over and over again, and Lot is in the house all the time, and it wasn't successful. So now Avraham Avinu says, I got to worry about my own family, my wife and myself, and eventually my children, right? I can't, and all the people that I converted, and all the people that I was mashpia on who live in my home, I can't have this Lot around who's a bad influence. And I once wanted to say that that's the deeper meaning of something Rabbi Yaakov Emden says on a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara says, Birkas Haminim Biyavne Tiknuhu. Simple meaning of the Gemara is, they added a bracha to Shmona Esrei. Shmona Esrei is no longer 18 brachas, but it's 19 brachas. And the 19th bracha was Birkas Haminim, Velamalshinim Altehi Sikva. Right? They made a curse on the Rishayim, on the Malshinim, on the Minim. Right? Curse them, they should be destroyed. So the Gemara says, where was that bracha instituted? Where was it formulated? In Yavne, when the Sanhedrin left Jerusalem after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and it went to Yavne, that's where that bracha was instituted, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So Yaakov Emden says something very cryptic on that. He says, "B'Yavne tiknu." There's a remez here. Yavne is Yayin, Bisamim, Ner, Havdalah. It's the first letters of those words, which is the Seder of Havdalah. Yayin, Bisamim, Ner, Havdalah. Yavne. What is he talking about? What in the world does this have to do with Havdalah? And that's the four parts of Havdalah. I was thinking, what he's trying to tell me is the following hint. Before you separate yourself from a Rasha, try to be Makarif. First, try with Yayin. Yayin represents two things. One is there's all different ways of influencing people and inspiring them. Some people are influenced by emotion. Get them to a Shabbaton and dance with them or whatever and sing with them, and that turns them onto Yiddishkeit. Emotion. That's Yayin. Yayin sensitizes your emotions. So try the wine. The wine has also another significance. That's something you do close together. You drink together, you toast together. It has very close connection. If that doesn't work, then maybe try a different thing. Try besamim. Besamim. What's besamim? Besamim is the aesthetics of Judaism. How beautiful it is. How nice it is. A nice Shabbos table. Nice family life. Try to impress them with the beauty, the aesthetics of Torah. A nice smell. Torah gives a nice smell. It's besamim, right? It's a nice aroma because it's aesthetically nice. It, look at the nice family. Look at the nice, what's it called, life that a person leads who leads a life of Torah. It's aesthetically nice. That's besamim. Besamim also, you're already not so close anymore. Besamim you could smell from a few feet away. You don't have to be right there. So maybe the person you weren't successful with trying to turn that person on emotionally, close by, distance him a little bit, and try to show him from a little bit distance the beauty of Yiddishkeit. That doesn't work? Then you got the Ner. Try to explain to him, enlighten him, teach him chachma. Some people are impressed with wisdom, with intellect. Some people are emotional, some people are more aesthetic, some people are more intellectual. So teach them the intellect of Torah. That's Ner, enlighten them. That can be done from really far away. You don't have to be really close. You can be far away and to hold up a big candle, and it can shed its light even farther than the Besamim goes. Once you've tried... What?
How do you know what catches them, what type they are? What
so you have to get to know them first. So first you have to get to know them. Then you have to try every possible way. And in, with distancing them a little bit each time. And finally, if you tried everything and nothing works, then Havdalah. Then separate yourself. Then you tried. You can't then stay in the proximity and the environment of somebody who's a bad influence. Then there's Havdalah. There's a time to separate. So Avraham Avinu tried with Lot. And he tried with Yishmael. He didn't throw Yishmael out till he was 37 years old. So he, what's it called, tried and tried, and it didn't work. So then you have to distance the person. Then you make Havdalah. That's the second answer. Third answer. Avraham Avinu, we said, started the 2,000 years of Torah. Before that was called the 2,000 years of Tohu Vavohu. Why was it called Tohu Vavohu? Tohu Vavohu means Or V'choshech Mishtamshim Berbuvya. Light and darkness mixed together. And Torah is light and darkness separated. What's the mile of Torah? Torah makes things clear. What's right and what's wrong. What's good and what's bad. Before that, everything was a mishmash. One big cholent. The example being the following. The Rambam explains, where did Avodah Zarah come from? How did people all of a sudden, if God created the world, and Adam HaRishon knew there was a God, how did people all of a sudden start worshipping other gods? Says the Rambam, what happened was the following. A very big mistake occurred in the generation of Enosh, right? Dor Enosh. Enosh, right, in his generation, they began to make the following mistake. They said, you know what? God is so great, and he delegated power to so many things in this world, the sun, the moon, the stars. They saw not only the physical powers, which is also magnificent, but the spiritual powers that come through these things, through the stars, through the sun, through the moon. And they said, you know what? If God gave such covet to these things, we should be mechabed them. Just like you give covet to a student as covet for the Rebbe. Right? What's it called? You give covet to the Talmud as covet for the Rav. Right? You give the king's emissaries honor because they represent the king. So these things God gave such power and such honor to, we should honor them. So they started to build palaces not to worship these things, but to honor them. Because it's honor of God. God honored these things. We should honor the things that God chose to give honor to. Why was that a mistake? And then from then it regressed and descended into idolatry. People forgot that they're giving honor to these things as honor to God. And they began to think that these things have power to themselves. And they started making sacrifices to them and serving them until they forgot about the Rabban Shom completely and only addressed these things. That's how Avodah Zarah got started. What was the mistake? They were right. You give honor to the king's emissaries, that's honor to the king. The answer is, Ein cholkin kovod l'talmid b'makom harav. When do you give honor to the student or to the emissary of the king? When the Rebbe's not there. Or when the king is not there. Then the king's representatives represent him. But if the king's standing there and you bow down to his emissary, that's a disgrace to the king. You're giving honor to the emissary because it's honor to the king. Honor the king. He's standing right there. Don't stand up for the Talmud. If the Rebbe's there, stand up for the Rebbe. So what was their mistake? Didn't they know that? No, but they held that God isn't there. Meaning that God is so great that he wouldn't have anything to do with these puny human beings. Why would God want to waste his time with us? So he appointed the sun, the moon, the stars, the angels. They have, you know, God himself is too great for this, so he has secretaries. He has a son, daughter, cousins, whatever. They take care of this world. And God's up there somewhere doing a lot more important things than dealing with puny human beings. So they didn't believe that the Ribbono Shel Olam is involved. So therefore they said we have to give cover to the things that the Ribbono Shel Olam delegated authority to. That's a mistake. That's how Goyim look at the world. Rom al kol goyim Hashem al hashamayim kevodo. By all the nations of the world, God's up there somewhere, dealing with much more important things than dealing with us puny human beings. But mi kashem elokeinu, our view of God is, he's Hashem, but he's also elokeinu, he's our personal God. Hamagbi lashadis, he's up there for sure, but he's hamashpili liros bashamayim ba'oritz, he has to do with everything in the world. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan said, whoever says v'yitein v'chol motzei Shabbos, says this at the end, Rabbi Yochanan said, "B'chol makom shatamotze gvuraso shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu, shama tamotze andesanuso." Wherever the Torah speaks about the greatness of God, it speaks about His humility. Because don't make the mistake to think that God's so great He has nothing to do with human beings. God is great, but He has something to do with every single human being, even the lowest of the low. And then you won't come to Avodah Zarah. So it comes out the mistake of Avodah Zarah was that God's not involved with this world, and therefore I should give honor to the things that God delegated honor to. But if you believe that God is involved with everything, then there's no place to give honor to anything except God. And I was thinking, that's what it says in the Aseres HaDibros. Lo yiyeh lecha Elohim acherim al ponai. Rashi says, kol zman shani kayim. As long as I'm around, don't give honor to other powers. What does that mean, as long as I'm around? That's exactly the point. If I wouldn't be around, then give honor to the other powers, because I gave them honor. But if I'm always around, then there's no place to serve Avodah Zarah. That's what it means. In any case, so it comes out that when they served idolatry, they did it thinking they're doing a mitzvah. We're serving God. We're honoring God by serving idolatry. So it was Or V'choshech Mishtamshim Berbuvia. It was light. They thought they're doing something good, but really it was something bad. So it was good and bad mixed together.
2,000 years
ago. Right, that's the Tov Avo. Avraham Avinu came along and he was able to show, this is bad, this is good. Separate the two. Don't mix them together. Don't think the bad things you're doing are good.
That's who worshipped the Avodah Zarah.
Who?
Am Israel, and after they knew that Hashem was one.
Yeah, yeah, they did it. People have a bechira to do enough to do sins.
Arzah weren't doing it in a way that they thought they were doing a mitzvah.
No, it could be there also. It could be they also thought that God delegated power, because these people were over there with the Zarah, but they also kept the Torah. That's what Eliyahu HaNavi told them. Either go after the Baal or go after the Rabbam Shalom. You can't have both. Mashra, they were doing both. They were keeping the Torah, but they felt that God gave over certain powers to things that they had to deal with also. And today, people, the Vilna Gaon says today, Avodah Zarah is money. Don't people do that? They're frum people. But they believe that money can give them success. So that's also an Avodah Zarah. Not believe that the Rabban Shalom is the one who gives you the money, and he's the one who can take the money away. But if you believe that money has power by itself, and you run after money because that's what's going to give you success or power, that's also an Avodah Zarah, and you can do that, keeping the Torah and be a frum Jew. So it's similar to that. Except they were more inclined to see spiritual powers than just plain old ordinary money. In any case, there's the Ravid says, why was Avraham Avinu chosen? Because he went out and he convinced the idolaters that what they were doing was wrong, and he broke their tzlamim, he broke their idols. So the Ravid asks, weren't there other tzaddikim, Shem and Aver? Didn't they go out and try to influence people? Didn't they break any idols? So the Ravid says something really very difficult to understand on the surface. He says, yes, of course they went out and they influenced people, but they never were able to find the idols to break them, because the idolaters hid their idols from them. But Avraham Avinu found the idols and broke them, and that's why he was chosen. Very difficult, right, on the surface. It comes out that Avraham Avinu, the only greatness he had was he's a good detective. He found the idols and was able to break them. The other people weren't such good detectives. Besides that, Avraham Avinu wasn't so great. He wasn't a great detective. His father had an idol store. So he followed him to work one day and broke the idols. What was the big deal? I think, therefore, the Ravid means something else. And also, who are these people hiding their idols? The whole world was serving idols. Who were they hiding it from? What I think he means is the following. They were hiding their idolatry behind a mask of respectability. This is not wrong. This is right. We're honoring God. So they hid it behind a mask of respectability. And nobody could break that mask. Nobody could expose it for what it really was. Avraham Avinu exposed it, and therefore he was able to break the idols. Breaking the idols does not mean that you break the idol, because the guy can make another one. He didn't accomplish anything. I remember when I was a teenager, we used to have a missionary near our school in Miami Beach, Lincoln Road. We used to call him Holy Joe. He used to give out free English, Yiddish, Hebrew, New Testaments to try to convert the old Jews of Miami Beach. So for fun, we used to go, take these New Testaments and rip them up in front of him. But it never helped, because he had an unlimited supply. He was supplied by some Baptist organizations, and they printed millions of these. So what difference did it make? We tore it up. It bothered him, but he got another one. So breaking an idol is not going to help. Breaking the idol means you convince the idol worshiper not to build it again. That's called breaking the idols. Nobody could convince what? They hid it behind a mask of respectability. They said, we're not doing anything wrong, we're honoring God. And none of the other tzaddikim had that clarity to be able to break the idols and convince them to leave it broken. Only Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu exposed the idolatry for what it was. That's called 2,000 years of Torah. Torah says, here's a bracha, here's a klala. You can choose what you want. But know that this is a bracha, this is a klala. Don't make the klala into a bracha. Mashenkin, the other tzaddikim, couldn't expose it, and it was tov avo, or v'choshech together, and they couldn't convince these people to give it up, because they thought we're doing something right. So Avraham Avinu was able to deal with people who did things that were wrong. They were served idolatry, but they thought they were doing something right. So Avraham Avinu could expose and say, no, this is darkness, this is no good. But Lot and Yishmael, just the opposite. Lot and Yishmael on the outside looked good. They did all good things. They baked matzahs and they were machnes oreach. And Lot looked just like Avraham. If you looked at Lot, he had the same kapota that Avraham wore. He looked like a big tzaddik. What was wrong with Lot? Inside, his kavanas were no good. Right? He was machnes oreach, but he was willing to mafker his daughters. Right? His outside looked great. His inside wasn't good. The idolaters were just the opposite. Their outside was no good. Right? And they thought on the inside they're doing good things. Avraham Avinu was able to expose them for what they really were. But Lot was almost impossible. Because Lot looked like Avraham. And because of that, people would be influenced by him. Oh, you see, here's another tzaddik like Avraham Avinu, and yet Lot inside was rotten. So to deal with somebody who on the outside looked good, but on the inside was rotten, was not Avraham Avinu's koach. His koach was to deal with people on the outside were rotten, but thought on the inside they're doing okay. It's not rotten. You can show them what you're doing is rotten. But when they're doing good things, but inside they're rotten, that was very difficult to deal with. And not only that, people like that are a bad influence on other people. Because people look at them and they see, wow, this guy's a tzaddik. He's eating matzah. He's being machnes oreach. And yet inside his midos were totally negative and rotten. That kind of person is a bad hashpa. So therefore Avraham Avinu could influence everybody, but not Lot and Yishmael, because they were the opposite of what Avraham Avinu's koach was. His koach was to expose bad for bad, right? Even though you think you have good intentions in doing it, and not to expose people who look good, but inside their intentions are not good. Yishmael was the same thing. Yishmael, what's it called? Sarah saw in Yishmael Gili Arayis Avodizorah Shvichas Damin. But he wasn't doing any of those things. He was mitzachek. He was just joking around. Yishmael. Later, next he said. What? It says she saw him mitzachek. So Rashi says that includes Gili Arayis Shvichas Damin Avodizorah. But if he was over those three things later on when he was in danger of dying, when the Malachim said, are you going to save this person? And God said, right now, is he a tzaddik or not? What? Not what's going to be in the future. And they said, well, he's a tzaddik now. What kind of tzaddik? He was over Gilei Arayis V'chus Domer. No. He was just joking around. He was fine. He just said it's a joke. It's not real. Inside, though, Sarah saw how rotten he was. What? No, sometimes a person, he said, it wasn't that he was over anything. He just treated life in a very joking manner. Right? And that leads to Gilui Arayos, because the Avraham Avinu Sarah saw that. Avraham Avinu didn't see that. He looked at the outside, looked good. Avraham Avinu couldn't deal with people who on the outside look good, but the problem was on the inside. He could deal with people who on the outside look no good, thinking on the inside they're doing good. He can show them, but outside is bad, it's bad. Don't mix it with good. And therefore, what we learn from here is the following. A person should realize how important it is to want to be mashpia on other people, like we said in the beginning. At the same time, there's times when you can't do it. Either because you're going to be influenced, or because other people are going to be influenced for the bad, and therefore you're not allowed to be makar. You have to stay away from these people. You have to make havdalah. But that this shouldn't take away the desire to do it. We find this idea by Yaakov Avinu. It says that Yaakov Avinu was punished, that he had to suffer when Dina was attacked because he hid her from Esav, and he didn't want to marry her off to Esav, that maybe she'll be mashpia on Esav. So the Mefarshim asked, that's how you make a shidduch? Take, you risk Dina, that maybe she'll be mashpia on her uncle Esav and make him into a tzaddik, and what if Esav is mashpia on Dina, makes her into a rasha? You don't care about Dina? You're willing to risk her? Right? That's the way you make a shidduch. Don't look for a ben Torah, a tzaddik, right? Look for the worst person you can find, right? And say, well, maybe I'll be mashpia on you. That's absurd. Says the Alter from Slabodka, Yaakov Avinu had to hide Dina away. He couldn't risk her marrying Esav and maybe being mushba l'ra. So what was the problem? He had to put her in a box and hide her from Esav. No problem. Except when he nailed the nails in the box, he did it with a little bit too much enthusiasm. He should have been crying and said, I wish I could be mashpia on my brother, but I can't take a chance with my daughter. I can't risk her. It should have bothered him. But he did it. He didn't care. So the Rabban Shalom said, you know what? I see it's not you're so concerned about your daughter. It's you're not concerned about Esav. That's the problem. Sometimes you can't be mashpia because you have to be worried about yourself. Maybe you'll be mushba. Maybe the people around you will be mushba for bad. But it has to bother you that you can't do that. What difference does it make? Two differences. One is, if you don't care at all, then even when the circumstances are ideal, you'll never be mashpia on anybody. But if it bothers you when you can't do it because of circumstances, when the circumstances are good, you'll do it. In addition, wanting to do it is itself a mitzvah. Because a person wants to do a mitzvah but can't, because he's prevented, gets schar as if he did it. So for those two reasons, it's good to want to do something even if you can't. But you should realize there's always a positive thing about influencing people. Sometimes you just can't do it. Like Avram couldn't do it with Lot and Yishmael for the reasons we said. Sometimes you just can't do it. But that shouldn't take away your desire to do it, because then when you can, you'll do it. And you'll also get rewarded for wanting to do it. So that is the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva says, that is the idea. It says, La'olam teidaito shalodam urevesa mabrios. Person should always be sociable, easy to get along with people. And Rashi says, Lasos kirson ish va'ish. To do what everybody wants. So they ask, how's that possible? You can't do what everybody wants. This person wants you to do this, somebody else wants you to do the opposite. You can't do what both of them want. Now you can't do what everybody wants. So the Talmud of Rosh Yeshiva of Elyamir Bloch Zatzal explains what it means is the following. Somebody asks you to do something. You can have two attitudes how to react. One is, why should I do that? And then think about it and say, okay, maybe I'll do it. Or you can say, why shouldn't I do it? And then think about it and maybe there's a reason why you shouldn't. You should always be willing to help everybody. Sometimes you can't do it. Sometimes what they want is not good for them. Not good for anybody. So, but your first reaction should be, I want to help you. I want to do it. And then you should think and see if you can or you can't. But wanting, even when you can't actually do it, is a mila. Because then when you can do it, you'll do it. But if you have no desire to help people altogether, you'll never help them. So the first part of what we spoke about is the importance of influencing, sharing your Torah, right? Not keeping it for yourself. That is extremely important. Can you always do it? No, Avraham Avinu couldn't be mashpia on Lot, and he couldn't be mashpia on Yishmael. He threw him out of the house. He separated himself from them. But does that mean you shouldn't want to do it? No, you should still want. Sometimes the answer will be, I can't. But if you want, then when you can, you'll do it. If you don't want, even when you can, you won't do it. And also, you get rewarded for wanting, even if you can't do it, because at least you have the intention of wanting to do it. That in itself is a mitzvah. So therefore, that's what we should learn from this parsha. On the one hand, the tremendous desire to want to help other people spiritually, yes, physically and materially also, but even spiritually, and to share your Torah with other people, at the same time to realize that sometimes you're not allowed to do it, or you can't do it. That shouldn't take away the desire. That should just mean that at certain times it's impossible, and the halacha is that you can't. You have to make havdalah, you have to separate yourself. You can't put yourself in an environment where you're going to be affected negative, right? Except under certain circumstances. When those circumstances don't apply, then you have to separate yourself. You can't influence people. You have to worry about yourself or worry about your family. But at that same time, it shouldn't be because you don't care about other people. It's just that I care, but what can I do? I can't do everything, and I'm not allowed to do everything. And even though I have a tremendous desire to want to help these people in this situation, I'm not allowed to. I'm capable of doing it. But I would like to, but I'm not allowed to. That's the difference.